40 greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
My special guest this evening is Allison Overholt, who was recently named editor-in-chief of both ESPNW and ESPN the Magazine. And Allison joins us now by telephone from ESPN headquarters in Bristol, Connecticut. Allison, welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here today.
And I'm also pleased to report, Allison, that we do subscribe to ESPN the Magazine at Voice of America.
That's what I love to hear.
Now, Allison, how do you feel about your new roles?
Oh, it's thrilling. I'm so excited. I'm a little bit daunted. It's a huge challenge, but really excited for everything that we're going to be digging into.
What will you be digging into?
Well, we just put out our MLB preview for the season, so we've got a terrific issue on the newsstands right now with Bryce Harper on the cover saying some pretty provocative things about the state of baseball and where he'd like to see his sport going. So that's been on our minds lately. And we've got an issue coming out called 73 Reasons to Love the Warriors. So it's all Steph Curry all the time, alongside a number of just tremendous stories about his teammates and the fans and, you know, backstories that people are going to be really excited about. And then after that, we're looking at an NFL draft preview, a WNBA at 20 issue. We've got a lot of exciting things in the hopper.
Bryce Harper and Steph Curry, two of the big sports stars here in the United States. In terms of who gets on the cover, Allison, how do you decide that?
Well, we have a lot of conversations about it. Primarily, it ends up being, what are the fans talking about? What are the exciting storylines that are happening, you know, in the sports conversation right now? And then it's all about the quality of the story. So, you know, we look at the opportunity to spend time with athletes, really get to know them, find out what they're thinking, how they're approaching the game. We look for opportunities to do original photography shoots with them. And it ends up being a little bit of an amalgamation of all those things. What's the best story? What are people talking about? Where do we have imagery that's really going to make people stop and pay attention?
Looking down the road, what are your future goals for the two publications?
Well, with ESPNW, we are really looking to be the place for women who love sports. So, you know, we focus on telling the stories and elevating the stories of women athletes, chronicling women's sports, but also speaking to women who identify with an athletic mindset and an athletic lifestyle. So everything from things you can learn about life and leadership from having an athletic background to, you know, training and motivation and how we can be inspired by the, you know, athletic stars that we look up to. So we're looking at a lot of interesting things going into an Olympic summer, because the Olympics is really a place where women fans, you know, get very, very excited, and, you know, the sort of fandom really comes to life. We're also looking at the 20th season of the WNBA, and so there's a lot of excitement around chronicling that. We're actually just going into, you know, the tournament, or we're in the middle of the tournament, but going into the drumbeat towards the Final Four for the NCAA women's basketball tournament. So there's a lot of excitement, particularly here in Connecticut, around, you know, this historic run towards a fourth possible championship for UConn. And with Breanna Stewart, the projected number one pick for the WNBA this summer. So there's a lot of excitement on that front with ESPNW.
In terms of female athletes, Allison, do you see disparities in the way they're covered by the sports media compared with male athletes?
Absolutely. You know, there's no getting around the fact that there's still a massive difference. And part of that is that, you know, women's sports, particularly women's professional sports, are at a different place in their development life cycle. So you end up with, you know, sometimes you know, expectations that the women's game will be in the same place as the men's game. And when it's not, you end up with folks who sort of come at coverage from almost an unconscious bias of negativity towards it. But one of the things, you know, that I've noticed a lot as I've been asked this question a number of times, particularly recently, is that it feels like the major difference is that so much of the coverage of women centers on how we cover women. That's actually the primary topic of conversation. There's so much talk of how do we package them? Are people watching? Do people care? And there's actually so very little about how women actually play the games that they play. So that's one of the things that, you know, ESPNW often jumps into that breach and, you know, works very hard to elevate the stories of athletes and their accomplishments. But also something I'm hoping to bring to the magazine where we can shine a spotlight on, you know, the athletes as athletes, you know, how they play the game. Really, really looking at that side of things and much less about, you know, how are they presented and how do we feel about the way people feel about them.
Can you comment on the current state of the sports magazine industry?
Well, you know, our view is so much broader. It's looking at storytelling across print and digital and social and TV and film. The ESPN, the magazine, actually generates so many big ideas and so many deep storylines that then play out across our entire network of platforms that's really where my focus is, and continuing to invest in the ambition, you know, of our journalism and our creative pieces, you know, is really where my focus is. But the interesting thing is that on the magazine side, there was a Magazine Publishers of America study recently released that was showing that, you know, ESPN the magazine leads all magazines in terms of brand audience, with a total brand audience of nearly 100 million readers. So it's interesting to me that, you know, the industry is showing something like, you know, 38-40% overall growth in the last year as far as, you know, brands with their top social following. So in an era where we're fully, you know, digital and thinking constantly all the time about, you know, a changing landscape for print, we're actually seeing that the influence and the reach of what originates in print is expanding, not contracting. So I'm very interested in the spaces where those things overlap, where print actually begins to influence the conversation that happens digitally and on television and beyond.
If you're just tuning in to the Sunny Side of Sports, I'm talking with Allison Overholt, editor-in-chief of both ESPNW and ESPN the magazine. You mentioned Breanna Stewart, Bryce Harper, Steph Curry. Do you have any favorite athletes?
Man, I love them all. I know that sounds so silly, right? You know, you've got to be the semi-impartial journalist over here. But, you know, I find that whoever has the fascinating, you know, moment happening, I'll just watch on repeat. You know, there are just so many athletes doing so many incredible things that it's hard to pick just one.
Dovetailing on Harper and his comments, do you see contributions by current sports stars as essential to the success of your publications?
You know, that's an interesting question because we've had a lot of conversations on our staff recently about the changing nature of access to athletes. I think that's one of the real effects that we've seen of, you know, social media and the proliferation of ways for celebrities, any celebrity, but athletes also, to be able to reach fans and reach audiences and however they would like to without necessarily needing traditional media as an intermediary. So, you know, we've been thinking a lot about the changing nature of access and what that means for our profession and the way we tell stories to fans. I do think that having athletes participate in stories, having them provide a certain amount of access to their lives and to how they do what they do, it still feels like this incredible opportunity to pull the curtain back and, you know, let people in on something that you wouldn't normally see. That said, I do think that there's so much storytelling that can be done from, you know, a 360 view of the game, of a team, of an athlete. So I feel like the sense of what athlete access means is evolving and changing every day, and we're sort of adjusting along with it.
You used the description, pull the curtain back. Can you pull the curtain back a little bit on a personal level? And what sports did you play growing up?
So when I was a little kid, I probably did the rounds of, you know, what every American kid does. I played youth soccer. I thought I was going to be a gymnast until I realized at, you know, age 10 that I was closing in on, you know, becoming a very tall individual. let's see. I wanted to be on the diving team. I think my mother told me I had to be on swim team first, and so I abandoned that because I was never a fast swimmer. By the time I was in middle school, I had switched over to basketball, and that was my sport. So I pretty much lived and breathed basketball through, you know, junior high and high school, spent every summer at basketball camps. You know, you were asking if I had a favorite athlete. Interestingly, I follow a coach more than an athlete because, you know, I saw Doug Bruno leading his DePaul team to another quote-unquote upset in the early rounds of the tournament this year, and I just loved it because, you know, in my mind, it's never an upset because I went to Doug Bruno's basketball camp every single summer starting in seventh grade. And, you know, man, that guy knows how to coach. That's all I have to say.
Basketball is my favorite sport. Also, what position did you play, Allison?
So it's hard to believe because here I would actually be on the shorter side for this position. But I was a 4-5 swing player. I was a center, you know, who kind of doubled as a power forward, even though I'm only 5'10", because I grew up in Hong Kong. So I was universally the tallest player in any game over there, which is kind of interesting. So it was fun to come back in the summers and go to, you know, camps for post players and be, you know, the short, fast girl, and then to go home and be the big man.
Based on your experience in Hong Kong, I know Yao Ming is credited with really developing basketball in Asia. Is basketball hot in Asia right now?
Oh, huge. And, you know, it was huge before Yao Ming. My mother's half Filipino, so I grew up going back and forth between the Philippines and Hong Kong, and, you know, basketball was the sport in Hong Kong, and then you go to the Philippines and people were just crazy for it. So we used to, you know, this was back before we had really any of the satellite, you know, providers that were, you know, bringing us games and things from the States on a regular basis. So we used to get the NBA game of the week, if you can believe it. So we got one game a week on Saturdays that my entire basketball team would crowd into my living room and we'd watch it before going to play our conference games. It was usually a Bulls game because Michael Jordan was, you know, always a guy even then. But it was fascinating. You know, people just loved it. I played tournaments in China and, you know, it was the thing that brought people out just, you know, by the thousands. When I was in high school, we got invitations to play, you know, semi-professional ball because there were leagues that were willing to pay girls to play hoops, you know, even back then on that sort of, you know, junior college type level. It was really interesting. So it's exciting to see, you know, what's happening now with the growth of the game. ESPN actually just started a partnership with a company in China called Tencent, where we'll be, you know, bringing coverage of the NBA over to China because the appetite there is just so voracious. It's an incredible growing part of the fan base right now.
What about the WNBA, Allison? Do you see that also growing in Asia and elsewhere?
It's a good question. I can't speak to their growth goals because I'm not privy to their, you know, business plans. But women's basketball globally is, again, another area that's been, you know, almost more advanced than it ever has been in the United States. It's funny. I think last year, was it the 15th or the 20th anniversary of one of my favorite movies of all time called Love and Basketball? And, you know, it's an interesting storyline in that movie that all the players, when they finish college, they go and they play pro overseas. So, you know, that's sort of my notion of where the women's game actually, you know, had more traction and was more exciting for a long time prior to the launch of the WNBA here in the United States. So, you know, when I was in high school, I would come to camps in the States in the summer, and I would hear the girls from college teams talk about how they are going to play pro in Greece or in Spain or in Italy or in, you know, in China. And, you know, that's continued to grow. It's continued to be a thing, you know, even now where you have situations like Diana Taurasi playing professionally in Russia, and they actually paid her $1 million last year to sit out her WNBA season because they wanted her to save up her energy to play for their pro team. So it's an interesting challenge for the WNBA. They're in an exciting moment right now. They're turning 20. They've got, you know, a lot of accomplishments to be proud of. But arguably, the game is more advanced in other countries. So if they want to expand internationally, it'll be interesting to see how they evolve in that direction.
My guest this evening on the Sunny Side of Sports is Allison Overholt, editor-in-chief of both ESPNW and ESPN, the magazine. March is Women's History Month in the USA. Are there one or two memorable American sports moments involving women that really stand out for you?
Oh, sure. I would imagine those moments are probably different for everyone, depending on what formative stages you were in your own life and where those sports moments intersect. So, you know, for me, being a kid in the early 80s, watching the Nadia Comaneci TV movie over and over on repeat, you know, I would probably say that my first great women's sports memory is Mary Lou Retton in the 1984 Olympics. You know, I remember jumping around my living room like a crazy person when she was doing her floor exercises and watching her vault and thinking she was going to fly through the ceiling and then that huge smile. So that's probably my first women's sports moment. You know, when I was in college the summer the WNBA started, I went to an LA Sparks game for my birthday with three of my high school friends, two of whom had been high school teammates. And for us, it was less about a particular sports moment and more the fact that that league had started. You know, the idea that girls could start to make money playing basketball just felt like everything had changed when we got to see that. And then probably, you know, once I finished college, I remember watching the 1999 Women's World Cup. I was in my first apartment in Washington, D.C., actually, where you are.
Okay.
And, you know, it was one of those little basement apartments. I don't even think I had cable. I was watching the game on this tiny television and just, you know, screaming my head off when that team won that game. And so it was very interesting to remember that when we were working on Women's World Cup coverage last summer here at ESPNW and, you know, watching the entire tournament and then seeing the U.S. Women's National Team reclaim that title last summer and actually being a professional teammate with Julie Foudy. You know, there was a moment where I sort of sat back and I remembered watching her win the World Cup and I just sort of shook my head and I said, you know, man, how is it possible that I'm teammates with Julie Foudy now here at ESPNW? And I remember watching that game and just thinking, you know, she was the greatest thing in the entire world.
Brandi Chastain, one of the heroes or heroines of that 1999 Women's World Cup. And she recently came out, Allison, with an interesting story about she's going to donate her brain after she dies for study, medical purposes. Is that the type of story you'd like to cover?
Oh, and we have, in fact. We had coverage of that on ESPNW.com, and it's a really important story, I think, because in all of the coverage of concussions, brain trauma, the links with sports, it's been really crucial to have smart reporting on that, you know, over the last few years. But that's an example of where women have largely been absent from the storyline. And in fact, there's a tremendous amount of research out there that, you know, women can be at times more susceptible to concussions because of, you know, differences in physiology and different ways that, you know, the female body responds in particular situations in soccer particularly has been highlighted, you know, as a place where we should be looking a little bit more closely at what the protocols are and what training regimens are and what we need to know about keeping women athletes safe. So with all of the attention and the spotlight on, you know, football and concussions, there's an important piece of research and coverage to be done on the effects of brain trauma with sports like soccer for men and women, but really remembering that it's important to have women in that kind of research and as a focus of those kinds of efforts.
Allison Overholt is the editor-in-chief of both ESPNW and ESPN, the magazine. Allison, thank you for chatting with us on the Sunny Side of Sports.
Thanks for having me.
Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is Andrew Palcheski, the Voice of America's social media reporter. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Good to be with you.
Andrew, what's trending in the sports world on this Tuesday?
Well, yesterday we talked about the men's NCAA basketball tournament Final Four. Today we're going to talk about the women because the women's Final Four is set.
Ladies first.
Ladies first, yes. And we'll start actually with Oregon State. They went on to beat Baylor last night. Kind of an upset. Oregon State was a 2 seed. Baylor was a 1 seed. So they're both very closely matched, but a little bit of the upset beating the 1 seed. But we had Ruth Hamblin, who's one of the players on this Oregon State team, tweeting out pictures as soon as the game was over, saying, "We're going dancing. This is great." You know, and I love, she had the little emoji of the, you know, the woman in the red dress kind of dancing like the tango dancer. She had that and a basketball. She put those two emojis next to each other in her tweet. But to Allison's point, as she was just talking about this access to athletes, you see this a lot with college athletes especially. They're not bound by many of the things that professional athletes are in terms of sponsors, and you must appear at this press conference and talk to this person. They can kind of just let loose. So we're seeing this with Ruth Hamblin. She tweeted out these pictures, Oregon State tweeting out this picture saying, "This is the face of somebody who's going to the Final Four." Now, interestingly, Oregon State won last night. They're going to the Final Four for the first time. On the other half of the bracket, Syracuse and Washington will play each other. Both of those teams are going to the Final Four for the first time. And who does Oregon State get to play? They get to play UConn, who's going for their fourth national title in a row. So you have one of these things is not like the other, where you have three teams that have never been to the Final Four, never been this far in the tournament, all going for the first time, and then this behemoth UConn, many people's favorite to win.
Great team, the powerhouse in women's basketball over the past two decades, really.
Absolutely.
And we heard Allison Overholt talk about the WNBA. I think we're going to see a few players in that Final Four go up to the professional ranks, later years.
For sure. And as we do that, we're going to see, I think, the social media continue. I'm seeing that a lot, too, with these younger athletes as they go through college. I mean, they've grown up with social media, so they know how to use it inside and out. And then as they move up to these professional leagues, they continue using it. So I think that's part of the reason why we're seeing more and more people in professional sports use social media, and not just the athletes, it's the coaches too, it's the assistant coaches, the managers. They're all using social media, and I think that's helping to contribute to seeing more athletes and athletics in the social media realm.
And in terms of social media, Andrew, I encourage our Voice of America listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. And my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. I asked Allison Overholt who some of her favorite athletes were, and she basically said all of them. I love all of them. But she did mention one female athlete in particular, Brianna Stewart from the University of Connecticut, arguably the best collegiate female player in the world right now. And she'll certainly be getting her name mentioned once or twice on social media the next few days.
Absolutely. Certainly for UConn, like you said, the behemoth that they are, they're a big social media topic. But also this year, Syracuse. Syracuse is the only team that has a men's and women's basketball team in each of their Final Four. And kind of unexpectedly, for the women, they're, I believe, a four seed. So it wasn't terribly unexpected, but had to jump over some higher seeds to get there. The men are, I think, an 11 seed. And it's only the fourth time in NCAA men's basketball tournament history that a double-digit seed has gone to the Final Four.
Interesting. Okay.
Syracuse started out the season slow. Their coach was suspended for a little while because they had some violations. So it's really, you know, the school, when you look at social media, is all over the place. Syracuse is jumping on this saying, "Look at us. We've got the men in there. We've got the women in there." So there's a lot of partying going on up in Syracuse, New York, over the next few days until those tournaments take place.
And I guess if you're a basketball fan from Syracuse, you'll have to plan your trips accordingly, because I think the women's Final Four will be held in Indianapolis, Indiana, and the men's Final Four will be in Houston, Texas. Bit of a trip between those two cities. I guess you could do it if you plotted your miles properly.
Some strategic planning in terms of flights and things. But the other thing we've been seeing actually on social media is people, as they're traveling to Houston and Indianapolis, we're seeing their journeys. So there were quite a few pictures I saw of people right at the entrance of, I believe it's the Energy Center in Houston, saying, "We're going to be there. We're going to be there this weekend for the Final Four games for the men in Indianapolis." They're going to start seeing some photos of that as well, I think, as for the women's tournament. So really the full experience.
Andrew Palcheski, Voice of America social media reporter. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you.
And that wraps up the March 29th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger, VOA engineer John Dryden, and thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
During the 31st regular session of the United Nations Human Rights Council in Geneva, United States delegates raised concerns regarding human rights in Syria, Iran, Burundi, South Sudan, North Korea, and China. They also highlighted abuses in several other countries. The delegates congratulated the government of Burma for taking key steps in the direction of democracy, but noted concern about continued military influence over the parliament and key ministries, abuses and discrimination against ethnic and religious minorities, and continued legal restrictions on freedoms of speech, assembly, and association. The United States led a joint statement on freedom of expression and peaceful transitions within democracies. 66 countries supported the statement, welcoming actions taken by states undergoing transitions to protect freedom of expression. The United States also supported important resolutions on the need for the protection of human rights defenders and the freedom to peacefully protest. The Council defeated an unprecedented number of hostile amendments, 31, which aimed to weaken the resolution on human rights defenders. U.S. Deputy Permanent Representative to the United Nations, Theodore Allegra, highlighted abuses in Latin America. The Venezuelan government uses detentions to suppress and punish government critics, including the political opposition, civil society, and independent media, he said. We call for the release of political prisoners and justice for those tortured and mistreated in detention. He also called on Cuba to end the practice of arbitrary short-term detention, respect freedoms of expression and assembly, and release all political prisoners. Regarding Russia, Mr. Allegra said the U.S. remains concerned about the occupation of Crimea and Russia's actions in eastern Ukraine. Domestically, the Russian government increasingly restricts freedom of expression while creating a climate of impunity for harassment and attacks against activists, journalists, and the political opposition. The promotion of human rights remains a pillar of U.S. foreign policy. The fight for greater freedom, greater respect, greater dignity is a unifying narrative of our humanity in all its diversity, Deputy Secretary of State Antony Blinken said recently. That is why we are very proud to join this council in upholding our common responsibility to this universal pursuit. The United Nations Human Rights Council celebrated its 10th anniversary this month. The United States' commitment to the mandate and mission of the Council runs deep into our nation's history, Deputy Secretary of State Blinken said in an address to the high-level segment. It is engraved into our nation's founding values and etched into the standards we strive to hold ourselves to every day.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Next on Straight Talk Africa. We will talk about the empowerment of women. Is it a myth or reality? Tune in to Straight Talk Africa Wednesday at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm Linor Moudou. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC right here on The Voice of America.